Hello, New York. This is Bill O'Shaughnessy, and this is the spot. This is the place on the radio dial. Welcome once more to your own WVOX, the most influential station in New York State, for you and yours. A labor of love every day, I can tell you, and every night at 1460 and WVOX.com, now broadcasting all over the world.
1460 WVOX. Good morning and welcome to Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Lebensold, your host for the series on the natural world, education and culture, and chronicler of the demise of Homo sapiens. We bring you guests from diverse disciplines, scientists, activists, authors, educators, entertainers, and public officials. We seek to stimulate your curiosity, intellect, and passion. Today's news from the natural world. Today is Thursday, April 12th, 2012, the 24th day of spring, glorious spring, and it is spring. Look out your window. We have gained 3 minutes of daylight since yesterday, 38 minutes since last we met 2 weeks ago. The sun rose at 6:20 this morning. It will set at 7:32 this evening. We will have 13 hours and 12 minutes of daylight today. The moon rose at 1:19 this morning. It will set at 11:11, just an hour and 2 minutes from now. We are 1 day shy of last quarter. Next full moon is May 6th. Next high tides in New Rochelle, 5:05 p.m. In Yonkers, 3:09 p.m. In Haverstraw, 4:19. Peekskill, 4:32 p.m. Our regular feature, names of American service members who have lost their lives at war. May they live on in all of our hearts. Navy Seaman Trevor J. Stanley, age 22, from Virginia Beach, Virginia. He was with the Naval Mobile Construction Battalion 3, killed in a non-combat-related incident in Djibouti on April 7th. Specialist Antonio C. Burnside, age 31, of Great Falls, Montana, with the 82nd Airborne. He was killed by small arms fire in Ganzi Province on April 6th. Corporal Alex Martinez, age 21, of Elgin, Illinois. He was with the 1st Marine Division, killed in combat by a roadside bomb in Helmand Province on April 5th. Sergeant First Class Jeffrey J. Reek, age 45, from Columbus, Ohio. He was with the Ohio Army National Guard, one of 3 soldiers killed when their unit was attacked by a suicide car bomber in Faryab Province on April 4th. The other 2 killed in that same incident were Sergeant First Class Sean T. Hannon, age 44, from Grove City, Ohio, and Captain Nicholas J. Rosansky, age 36, from Dublin, Ohio. All 3 were with the Ohio Army National Guard. Specialist Jeffrey L. White, Jr., age 21, of Catawissa, Missouri, with the 25th Infantry, killed by a roadside bomb in Coast Province on April 3rd. Staff Sergeant Christopher L. Brown, age 26, of Columbus, Ohio, 4th Infantry, killed by a roadside bomb while on dismounted patrol in Kunar Province on April 3rd. Corporal Christopher D. Bordoni, age 21, from right up the road here in Ithaca, New York. He was with the 2nd Marine Division, mortally wounded on January 18th when a suicide bomber detonated an explosive device. This was in Helmand Province. Corporal Bordoni hung on until April 3rd when he passed. And another Marine, Corporal Philip D. McGeith, was also killed in that attack. I presume he died instantly or much sooner. Specialist James Evan Dutton, age 25, of Chicota, Oklahoma, with the 1st Armor, non-battle-related injury in Logar Province on March 31st. Corporal Roberto Cazares, age 24, of Harbor City, California. He was with the 1st Marines. He was killed by a roadside bomb during combat in Helmand Province on March 30th. Specialist David Wayne Taylor, age 20, of Dixon, Kentucky, with the 82nd Airborne. He was killed by small arms fire in Kandahar province, March 29th. Corporal Michael J. Palacio, age 23, from Lake Elsinore, California, with the 3rd Marine Division, killed by a roadside bomb during combat operations in Helmand province on March 29th. These 14 American servicemen were alive when last we met 2 weeks ago. Private First Class Davis and Corporal Palacio were killed on that very day. Perhaps we were while we were on the air, an American soldier might be dying at this moment, at any moment. Just think that there are people in the field with guns shooting at each other right this moment. Each of these deaths is a great loss to their families and to all Americans. May they live forever in our hearts, and may this feature come to an end in the near future, because there are no more deaths to report. It's time for the Culture Corner. My reviews of plays, movies, opera, ballet, museums, what have you. Keep in mind that these are my opinions and you have the right to disagree with them, because everyone has the right to be wrong. Well, you don't have the right to be wrong today because we have nothing to review. In 2 weeks, we will review the new Broadway musical, Peter and the Star Catcher. My guest today is Professor Benny Morris of Ben-Gurion University of the Negev in Be'er Sheva, Israel. He is one of a group called the New Historians and has some very controversial views. Speaking to us from Be'er Sheva, Israel, do we have him, Debbie? Welcome, Professor Benny Morris.
I'm happy to be with you.
Good morning. What is the weather like in Israel this morning?
Well, today is cool, but we're in the middle of a heat wave, in fact.
And a heat wave in Israel, since you're somewhat tropical and you're in the desert, I guess. The Negev is a desert, is it not?
Well, I don't actually live in the desert. I live in a sort of a green area just north of the desert.
Okay, but the university is...
The Ben-Gurion University is in Be'er Sheva, which is in the Negev, yes.
Okay, very good. Okay, now, you're a controversial fellow, Professor, and you've been called a new historian. Now, is a new historian a pejorative term? Is it like revisionist, like you're trying to change things? Just tell us what that term means and how you take it.
Well, actually, I coined the term in 1988 in an article in which I sort of said that a new wave of historians has come forward basing their work on documentation which had recently been opened in Israel, in America, and England. And these I contrasted to the old historians who'd essentially been writing official Israeli history. So this was really a new look at the history of the 1948 period and other episodes in Israeli history based on new documentation which became available in the 1980s. You can call it revisionist if you like.
Well, I always think of revisionist as being a negative term because people try to, like for instance, one example of revisionist would be the Holocaust never happened.
Well, that's not really revisionist. That's just plain foolish.
Of course.
And also in some way evil because it's a lie. But revisionists, I think, usually try to improve on the old historiography, which often is lacking in documentation, often is ideologically motivated. Revisionists can also be ideologically motivated, but at least they usually end up having a larger documentary base for their work, which is very important in history, of course.
Of course. Now, some people have accused you of using only Israeli sources and ignoring Arab writings and Arab opinions. Is that true? And what do you have to say about that?
Well, I suppose it's sort of true, but it's really a function of what's available in Arabic. It's also not true that I used only Israeli sources. I used English, British documentation, American documentation, UN documentation in my works. The problem with Arab documentation is it's simply unavailable. All the Arab states are dictatorships. They always have been. Maybe now it's beginning to change, but they've traditionally been dictatorships. They do not open their archives. Maybe they have nothing in their archives. Maybe somebody burnt things after each successive dictator took over. We don't know. But then nobody actually has access to the things which are in the archives. And if you base the historiography on documentation, you have to have access to documents. if the Arabs don't make them available, you use the other documents which are available. And that's what was available to me and, in fact, to most historians. Among those who criticized my non-use of Arab documentation are many people who never used Arab documentation because it doesn't exist.
Okay, that's fair. Now, you did mention that maybe now it's changing. I gather you're speaking of the Arab Spring. Do you have any hope for that? What do you think of this Arab Spring?
Well, I'm ambivalent about it. Look, it's a wonderful thing when people sort of come out in their in massive form to demonstrate against dictators, to try and topple dictators. They bare their chests before troops and police who are shooting at them. This is very courageous. The problem is they have managed to do some, I suppose you could call it positive work. They have toppled a number of old dictators in the Arab world, in Egypt, in Tunisia, in Yemen. But on the other hand, the forces that seem to be coming to the fore as a result of this toppling of the old regimes are Islamists. And these Islamists want to impose strict Muslim law on their population, some of which include Christians. They don't believe in democracy. They are opposed to it ideologically. So they may come to power democratically through an election, but once they have power, you won't see them leaving very quickly. This is what happened in the Gaza Strip when the Hamas, the Islamists of the Palestinians, took over, and so on. Islamists also carry with them an anti-Western ideology and a will to destroy Israel. So this, from Israel's point of view, and I think it should be from Washington's point of view, okay, is a very bad outcome.
The thing is, though,
we don't know if this is going to be the final outcome. Okay, this is what's emerging now from the various processes, electoral and others,
Professor
in
Morris,
the Arab world. But maybe the Islamists will be overtaken by something more liberal.
Professor Morris.
My fear is that this isn't going to happen.
Okay,
that the Islamists will consolidate their hold, and for the foreseeable future, they will control the Arab world, and this is not very good for us.
Professor Morris,
I'm going to have to take a break.
I'm going to have to take a break right now. Hang on. We'll be right back with you. You're listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York, and we will be right back.
With business news at 20 minutes past the hour, every hour, here's the latest update from the Fox Business Network on WVOX Worldwide.
From the Fox Business Network, stocks starting off strong as investors digest a round of economic news out this morning. At 10 a.m. Eastern Time, the Dow up 80 points. Initial jobless claims rose more than expected last week to 380,000. The estimate was for 355,000. The prior week was also revised higher to 367,000, but even with the revision, that's 13 weeks now below 400,000. March producer prices were unchanged as a drop in gasoline costs offset rising food prices. The expectation was for an increase of 0.3%. The so-called core index, which factors out food and energy, was up 0.3%. That part of the report was expected to rise by 0.2%. And the February trade deficit narrowed sharply to $46 billion as exports hit a record high. Economists were expecting it to narrow, but only slightly, to $52 billion. With the Fox Business Report, I'm Sandra Smith.
Hi, I'm a home. You know where your heart is? Don't worry, I know how you feel about me. That's why you need to get me flood insurance. If you get homesick after a few days, imagine how a flood would make you feel. Just a few inches of water can cost tens of thousands of dollars in damage. And homeowners insurance doesn't cover floods. But in moderate to low risk areas, flood insurance starts as low as $129 a year. Visit floodsmart.gov to learn how a flood could affect you.
Morning.
You make my morning.
Noon.
Well, I'm at work.
And night.
The way home from work.
The one you can count on for fun. VOX.
1460 WVOX.
We are back. We are speaking with Professor Benny Morris of Ben-Gurion University of the Negev in Be'er Sheva, Israel. Professor Morris, you are in Be'er Sheva right now?
No, I'm just north of it in a village called Lyon, which is where I live.
Lyon, did you say?
Lyon. It sounds like the French city, but it's actually a small Israeli village.
Okay. Lyon, in Lyon, Israel. Okay, that will explain a bit of the delay in the signal. So I love your enthusiasm. I love the way you talk about what you're talking about. Just the take a breath occasionally in case I need to interrupt for a break or something, all right?
Okay, I'll try and remember that.
Okay, because what you say is fascinating. I really don't want to cut you off, but they will cut me off relentlessly. Okay, you spent some time in New York, actually. You were here for something like 6 years, weren't you?
Yes, I spent two chunks of my childhood and youth in New York.
How do you like New York?
Well, at the time, it was actually a fairly violent place, crime-ridden, but I like New York very much. Now it's a much better place than it was in the 60s and 70s.
So is Israel safer than New York was back then?
I missed what you said.
Is Israel a safer place in general than New York was back then?
I can't remember. This is like 40, 50 years ago.
Okay. you were a paratrooper in the 1967 Arab-Israeli War at age 19.
I think that's inaccurate. Oh. I was a paratrooper,
yes,
but not during the war. During the war, I was actually in infantry, in regular infantry, and I became a paratrooper about a year and a half later in the special service I was in.
So you did see action, though, on the ground?
Well, you can call it, I was in action, but not very active action. We sort of walked from a kibbutz, a place in the north called Degania, where we were based during the waiting period before the war. We walked from there towards the Golan Heights. The Syrians shelled us. Our battalion commander was killed and a few people were killed and injured, and we sort of withdrew. That was, I think, on the 9th of June, the day before the Golan Heights, in fact, were captured by Israeli troops coming from another direction.
Well, that does qualify as seeing action when some of the people in your unit was killed, for sure.
I suppose that's action, yeah.
Definitely. Later on, however, you actually were jailed for refusing to serve in the occupied territories, was it? What's that about?
Well, in 1987, at the end of 1987, the Palestinian population in the West Bank and Gaza began what they called an intifada, or sort of a mini-revolt, but basically using non-lethal means, stones and the demonstrations and so on. Occasionally there was some terrorism, but it was mostly non-lethal. They wanted to get the Israeli army off their backs. Israel had been occupying the territories for 20 years by then. And I was called to reserve duty in early 1988 and decided that it was against my conscience to serve in suppressing this intifada in the town of Nablus, which is where my unit was supposed to go. So I refused and was sent to jail for 3 weeks.
So you actually, your stance was actually let the Arabs alone at this point? Well,
we were in occupation of the territory,
right.
So I'm not saying I was against in reaching some sort of deal and leaving the territory, but I was against using violence against the demonstrators who were basically not trying to kill Israelis at the time, unlike in the second intifada, which began in the year 2000, in which the Palestinians employed complete terrorism and mass murder.
So as long as the demonstrations are peaceful, you're fine, and you believe truly in freedom of expression and freedom of speech and that.
Yes, that's basically it. I'm not saying that they were completely peaceful, but they weren't lethal. And I believe in the right of protests of people, the right to protest against a military occupation, sure.
Excellent. Okay, now let's get to Iran, because that's pretty important these days. You have said, actually, that Iran should be attacked, and I think one of your extreme statements was they would be lucky to get off with us just bombing their facilities, because if they do develop nuclear weapons, they would be looking at a nuclear war. Please, what did you say, and what do you mean by that?
Well, I wrote an opinion piece which came out, I think it was in the New York Times.
Yes, it was.
And I said that the Iranians are busy, despite their dismissals of it, they are busy developing nuclear weapons. And if they reach atomic weaponry, they might well use their weapons. I believe they are a mad and very bad regime, and you can't depend on them not to use nuclear weapons if they have them. They hate Israel. They believe that Israel should be destroyed. They believe God commands them to destroy Israel. So what I said was, if they get nuclear weapons, this may end up posing to the West and to Israel the possibility of either a preemptive strike, or they may use their weapons and then Israel will retaliate. In other words, you'll end up with a nuclear war. What I said was, if you can take out their nuclear installations and prevent them from getting nuclear weapons by conventional means, that is, of course, much better than waiting a few years and then ending up in a nuclear war.
So do you think we should, either Israel or the United States, should preemptively take Iran's nuclear capability out right now? Or is the diplomacy still valid? And do you think Obama is taking it too cautiously?
I don't know. Look, we don't have all the facts. We don't know, we meaning the general public, and I think the problem is the intelligence services of Israel and America also lack information. The Iranians have been very secretive about everything. So we don't know exactly how far developed, how far advanced they are, how much more time they have until, how much more time they need until they develop the actual weapons and produce them. But it seems that there is still a window of opportunity of a few months, and I think Obama's right in this, and the Israeli government has supported him in this.
Excellent.
There's a few months of opportunity still for a diplomatic resolution, which is backed, of course, by sanctions, which might persuade the Iranians to halt their nuclear weapons program.
So you are...
If they don't do that, there isn't very much time, and in the time that is left after the negotiations break down, if they break down, either America or Israel must destroy the Iranian nuclear facilities so that they don't produce weapons.
Okay, but you are hopeful that diplomacy can work. And actually, we're scheduled to begin talks tomorrow for a couple of days. I don't know if Hillary Clinton will be there personally, but it's the Department of State that is doing that. So do you have any hope, or is this just going to be more smoke?
Well, the Iranians so far have had several bouts of negotiations with America and the West. Each one has been used simply to gain time and to stonewall. I fear that this is their intention as well here. I don't think they're going to back off from their nuclear project.
Okay.
This is how Ahmadinejad, their president, speaks. Sound like he's going to actually make the concessions necessary.
But
it's worth giving it one last chance, and this appears to be the last chance. So we're talking about the spring and maybe into the summer. After that, if the negotiations break down, either Iran will be allowed to get their nuclear weapons, we'll be in a terrible different ball game altogether, or somebody will have to take them out militarily.
Okay, Professor, we do have to take another quick break. Please stand by. We'll be with you in a few minutes. You're listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. This is Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Lebensold. My guest is Benny Morrow, speaking to us from Israel, and we will be right back.
World and national news three times an hour. Here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio. I'm Ron Flatter. The mother of the unarmed Florida teenager killed by a neighborhood watch captain says she believes the shooting was an accident. Sabrina Fulton telling interviewers that she thinks the situation between George Zimmerman and her son Trayvon Martin simply got out of hand. Zimmerman is due in court to be read a second-degree murder charge.
The incident ignited racial tensions. Trayvon's father, Tracy Martin, says it's time to end that.
We will continue to hold hands on this journey. White, black, Hispanic.
Zimmerman's attorney plans to ask for bail.
Fox News Radio's Evan Brown in Sanford, Florida. It appears the two sides fighting in Syria are honoring a ceasefire for now.
Activists inside Syria say there's been no fighting today, but the Syrian government say they do still reserve the right to respond to any attacks carried out by armed terrorist gangs.
Fox News Radio's Emily Wither in Jerusalem. Fox News. We report, you decide.
And now with your latest up-to-date forecast, here's Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather, exclusively on WVOX Worldwide.
Well, the forecast for today calling for mostly cloudy conditions. There'll be some scattered light showers from time to time, or highs generally around 60, north winds at 10 to 15. A chance of rainfall is about 50% for today. It'll be partly cloudy for this evening, some scattered showers still possible, then clearing up overnight, lows near 40. Friday's looking sunny with their highs for the day in the mid-60s, mostly clear at night, lower 40s. Saturday features mostly sunny weather in the upper 60s. Sunday even warmer, mid-70s, clouds and sun with a chance of showers. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX Worldwide, WVIP HD.
Here, there, and everywhere.
Every day, every night.
We're number one for fun.
At work, at home.
WVOX Worldwide.
1460 WVOX.
We are back. This is Bob Levinsold, and we are in New Rochelle. If you are listening in, I threw my schedule off a little bit. All right. We're speaking with Professor Benny Morris, speaking to us from Israel. Are you back with us, Benny?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay. It's very interesting what's happening with Iran. I'm glad to hear that you have some, you've backed up a little bit. If my reading was correct, back when you did write that editorial for the Times, it was a couple of years ago, I think, you suggested that an attack on Iran should be imminent. I'm glad to hear that you're at least willing to allow the diplomacy, and you're, if not hopeful, maybe skeptical, but at least your mind is open. That's great. Bibi Netanyahu has said a couple of things. The most poignant thing he's ever said is that if Palestine were to lay down their guns tomorrow, there would be no war. And if Israel were to lay down theirs, there would be no Israel. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, more or less. Israel has been under siege basically for the last 60-odd years of its existence, since inception, and has been attacked a number of times, has had to go for preemptive wars a number of times, has continuously been under terroristic attack from the Palestinians, from Hezbollah, from various Islamists. So it has to remain well-armed and on its guard. And there is no choice, has no choice on the, about this. If the Palestinians cease attacking Israel, and if the Arab world accepted Israel's existence, it's really a matter of accepting Israel's legitimacy,
right.
We could have peace. I think this is the main obstacle to peace, their unwillingness to recognize Israel's legitimacy.
Well, Netanyahu has also said that there is irrationality among the Arab nations. Now, I presume that most people in Israel and in Palestine and in the rest of the world really just want peace. They want to go about their day-to-day. But you have this combination of the Ayatollah Khamenei and this lunatic Ahmadinejad in Iran. Now, tell me, in the recent election, the Ayatollah actually gained enough power that he could just get rid of Ahmadinejad. What do you think about that? Do you think he will? Do you think he should? Is Khamenei just as bad as Ahmadinejad?
Well, I'm not an expert on Iranian politics or even about the different personalities there. I think, though, unfortunately, the people who rule the place, and this includes Khamenei, the spiritual leader, and Ahmadinejad, the official president, they are religious fanatics, all of them. They may vary about some on small points about tactics, but essentially, they are all religious fanatics, and they believe that Allah put them in power. They believe that Allah wants them to retain power. They're against democracy. They hate the West. They hate Israel. So I don't see much difference. So there's occasional local elections there, which may mean something or may mean nothing. Their opposition, which tried to have proper elections and reinstate democracy, failed to do that. The situation is really unchanged. It doesn't really matter that much whether Khamenei has a little more power or Ahmadinejad has a little less.
Really? Okay. Well, the way I read it was that Ahmadinejad was now Khamenei could do whatever he wanted without him. I'm just wondering if he's an equal threat, but I guess so. So now, but do you agree with my statement that the average Iranian in the street just wants peace and to go about their day to day, or do you think there's an inherent fanaticism among all Arabs?
Well, the Iranians aren't Arabs, but I think most people, Arabs, Iranians, Pakistanis, Europeans, Israelis, most people do want peace. They want to be able to put bread on their table, have a decent education, and peace for their children, and so on. The problem is that there are political elites who control various dictatorial countries. And the political elite in Iran wants other things foremost. It may also want to feed their population, but it wants to achieve nuclear weaponry. It wants to undermine the West's position in the Middle East. It wants to destroy Israel and so on. And they're willing to sacrifice some of their people's peace and well-being to attain these ends. And this is the problem.
Absolutely the problem. I agree with that. Let's take the issue of Jerusalem. Netanyahu has said that Jerusalem will always be the capital of Israel. No No room for sharing. It just always will. But I ask you, is there room for sharing? Could it be a dual capital? Could both countries, the Palestinians and the Israelis, since that particular piece of real estate seems to be so important, could they share it and have that kind of communication among the peoples or between those peoples?
Well, I've always believed that a two-state solution is what is necessary, and I don't think that the Palestinians will ever agree to a two-state solution. I'm not sure they will anyhow, but they certainly won't agree to a two-state solution without having part of Jerusalem as their capital. So I think if you want peace, you have to agree to sharing Jerusalem in some way. Either it can serve as a united capital for both peoples, or it can be split in half, with the different parts being the capital for each people. But it's necessary. I don't know if Netanyahu agrees with this. I don't think so. So far, his positions have been that Jerusalem must remain united and only the sovereign capital of the Israeli, the Jewish state. On the other hand, one of his predecessors, Ehud Barak, when he negotiated with the Palestinians back in the year 2000, offered the Palestinians half of Jerusalem, as well as the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, and the Palestinians said no, they rejected that as well.
Yeah, wasn't that ridiculous?
Theoretically, there is no chance for peace unless the Palestinians also have part of Jerusalem, or Jerusalem in some way, as their capital, as well as Israel has it as its capital.
Well, that seems to make sense to me, but apparently, I don't know, there's intransigency on both sides, unfortunately. I'd like to take up Günter Grass's recent poem. Are you familiar with this controversial poem? Well-known.
Yeah, I actually haven't learned it by heart, but I've read the essence.
Okay, now, he claims, he's on the defensive a bit, he says it's an anti-Israeli policy, but not anti-Israel. Do you have any thoughts about that? Because he's very well-known, and he's taken a lot of heat for this poem. What do you think?
Well, Günter Grass is a great writer, or was a great writer. Deserved the Nobel Prize he won. He's also a German, and Germans have, since 1945, since they stopped killing 6 million Jews, have been remorseful about their past and have been very careful in their expressions or attitudes about Israel and the Arabs. And rightly so. They have to. The history has put a tremendous burden on them in this sense. Günter Grass has broken ranks with the Germans and with enlightened Germans by basically saying stupid things and things which are illogical. Israel is a great threat to peace. The Iranians are a wonderful people. Nobody's proved that they're going towards atomic weaponry. These things are nonsensical. And from somebody who served in the Waffen-SS voluntarily at the end of World War II, they sound maybe a bit anti-Semitic. They may come from that, they may spring from there, and this is what has annoyed many Israelis.
And do you think that Günter Grass is just an old man expressing himself without any political censoring of himself, or do you think there's some racism there or some resentment? What do you think?
Well, it could be a bit of racism. It could be a desire to get attention. I mean, he is an old, elderly man, and he's perhaps not as often asked for his opinions as he used to be.
Right.
So it may be that as well. But it also may be his view of the Middle East. That is, that the Israelis really are to blame, that the Arabs and the Iranians are innocent parties in this. I think that's a mistaken view, but he's expressed it in such a way that it annoyed greatly Israelis. I think the Israeli reaction of banning his entry into Israel is stupid, and he's right about that.
Okay, now, not by chance, I'm sure, but the Iranians chose Qom, I guess I'm pronouncing it correctly. Qom is to erect their major nuclear plant, and that is also the most important place for Shiite Islam. What happens? What if we take Qom out? Do you think it's a good thing to do that, or and what would the repercussions be?
The plant isn't actually in Qom. It's a few miles out, about 10 miles or whatever, outside Qom in some mountain. So I don't think anybody has to take out or destroy a city, the holy city of Qom, where like the center of the Shiite, the Iranian Shiites, in order to destroy their nuclear facilities. You don't have to hit the city.
Okay.
But there probably are various nuclear installations inside towns, and this represents a formidable problem. This has always been a problem for Western states and Israel fighting immoral regimes and immoral organizations who place their weaponry and plants among civilians. This is a terrible problem. But I don't think that's the problem in Qom at the moment.
Excellent. Okay, that's a good, that teaches me something, because when I saw Qom and I know that Hazrat, the Shrine of Hazrat is there, I said, whoa. But okay, that clears that up. That's very good. Now, the United States has bunker buster bombs that Israel does not have. I mean, we both have nuclear weapons, but these bunker busters are, it's hard to call them conventional because they're so destructive. Do you think that the United States should be more proactive, should go in there and make some kind of statement? Or again, I guess I'm repeating the question, is diplomacy still to be given time? Because we do have a fairly good estimate of when Iran can have a working nuclear bomb.
As I said, I think there is still some months, but I think Israel's defense minister, actually a very intelligent man, called Barak, said it's a matter of months, we don't have years. And I think that's probably the situation. In other words, there are some months in which to let diplomacy and sanctions work. If they don't stop the bomb, then the bunker busters will have to come into play.
Okay, we have...
Otherwise, they'll have a nuclear weapon.
Okay, well, we have one more segment. We'll discuss that when we come back. You are listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. If you're listening in Dublin, Ohio, or Ireland, Ithaca, New York, or Ithaca, Greece, Rome, New York, or Rome, Italy, counties Thomond, Desmond, or Cork, Ireland, or any of the Benelux countries, that would be Belgium, Netherlands, or Luxembourg, you have logged on to www.wvox.com. You are listening live. This is Environmentally Sound. My name is Bob Lebensold. My guest is Professor Benny Morris of the Ben-Gurion University of the Negev in Be'er Sheva, Israel. And we will be right back.
World and national news three times an hour. Here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio, I'm Don Matheson. A bail request expected when the man facing second-degree murder charges in the shooting death of Trayvon Martin faces a judge.
George Zimmerman will make his first court appearance this afternoon. The incident has sparked racial tensions and protests nationwide, but Trayvon Martin's mother now tells TV interviewers this morning she thinks the shooting was likely an accident.
Fox News Radio's Evan Brown in Sanford, Florida. Jury selection gets underway in the trial of former presidential candidate John Edwards.
He faces six criminal counts related to nearly $1 million in secret campaign donations that he maintains he had no knowledge of. The donations were made to a former campaign aide, Andrew Young, who initially claimed that the baby of Edwards' pregnant mistress, Rielle Hunter, was his.
Fox News Radio's Courtney Keeley. In Chicago, a 60% spike in homicides. In the first quarter, there are 120 killings. Fox News, we report, you decide.
This is Don Stevens, program director of WVOX. All of us here at WVOX are saddened by the loss of our own Nora Murphy, who died this past Monday. Nora was the host of Nora's Neighbors, heard here on WVOX Thursdays at 1 from 2006 to 2011. Our condolences go out to her family. Visiting hours will take place at the Fred H. McGrath & Son Funeral Home in Bronxville between the hours of 6 and 9 tonight and 9 to 10:30 tomorrow morning, with a massive Christian burial at St. Joseph's Church in Bronxville following at 11 a.m. In lieu of flowers, contributions to Hope Community Services would be appreciated.
The most innovative and groundbreaking local transportation service is now here. The Green Team Cab Corporation in New Rochelle. The one and only Green Team Cab Corporation features all new 2011 super luxurious hybrid cars that really make you feel like you're being driven in style and comfort. The Green Team is perfect for all your corporate needs. A trip to the airport or just a ride anywhere locally. Call Brian Herbie or Mr. O'Mara today at the Green Team Cab Corporation in New Rochelle for a new kind of luxury transportation experience second to none. We love the Green Team and you will too. 914-576-1200 in New Rochelle, 576-1200. Credit cards accepted in the car, no minimums, no forced gratuity. 576-1200, the Green Team, now the most innovative and superior way to travel. The Green Team, saving the planet one ride at a time.
This is the authentic voice of the people.
It's a community station.
AM 1460 WVOX.
1460 WVOX.
Okay, we are back. We're speaking with Professor Benny Morris, speaking to us from Lyon, Israel. Israel. What is that? Benny Morris, are you with us?
You have $3. One.
I think we've lost Professor Morris. Can you call back, Debbie? Okay. Sorry, we seem to have lost our connection with Israel. Debbie's going to try to get him back for the next few minutes. In the meantime, let me just say this is a question I would ask him, but let me just tell you what he has said, what I have seen that he has said. He talks about the Arab world and Islamic people, and again, I don't know if I'm quoting him exactly right, so I need to really bounce it off him if we can get him back. In any case, what he has said, and it rings a little true. I don't want to believe this, but and as we discussed earlier, people are people wherever they are. It's just the governments that tend to get rambunctious, and certain people rise into